The material provided today is for informational purposes only. It should not be considered legal or financial advice. Consult with a financial professional for your own needs. John E. Sestina & Company disclaims any and all liability for the interpretation and use of the content provided today.
I need help getting out of my student loan debt.
I'm so worried. How am I going to afford taking care of my parents?
When's a good time to get into the market?
I'm really not sure when I should start taking my Social Security.
I wonder if I have enough insurance.
I wonder when I can retire.
It's time to talk about your money, managing to be wealthy. Our team of fee-only financial planners is ready to help you create better financial habits, envision your long-term goals, and understand money management better than ever. Our resident hosts of John E. Sestina & Company are on deck to show you the way.
Thank you for joining us today. I'm your host, Tracy Bennett. In studio with me are Stephen Luke and Spencer Hager, certified financial planners. How are you guys doing today?
Doing well. Excited.
Fantastic.
Are you?
Yeah. You teased the topic to us.
Yeah. So. I'm not as excited as you are, only because this is so over my head. So if our listeners could just be patient with me, that would be great. I'm just going to throw that disclaimer out there right now. Today we're talking about investment strategies in the current interest rate environment. And, you know, this is always a hotbed, hot subject for us with our clients as people are trying to buy homes and large purchases, right? But the investing side is interesting from my perspective. You guys do this every day. But before we start, I want to give people two or three sort of foundational elements that they need to understand about interest rates in general, especially as it pertains to investing. And then I'll go into kind of pointed questions.
Okay. Go ahead.
So just kind of foundational stuff for people who are...
Yeah, I know we're going to get big picture with this, but just specifically to interest rates, if you have bonds in your portfolio, probably the first thing, and when I say bonds, it could be mutual funds that have bonds in them, individual bonds, but as interest rates fluctuate, that affects the value of the bond. So usually when rates go up, the value of the bond you have go down, and then vice versa, right? So the inverse relationship, historically, bonds, when they... historically, bonds are in there and as a shock absorber. And so, again, the interest rate piece. Usually when rates go down, people really go towards equities. Like I said, inverse relationship with bonds. And do you want to take the third?
Yeah, well, I'll also say interest rates also affect the stock market.
Yeah.
Same thing, right? Inverse relationship to stock prices have an inverse relationship to interest rates. Even from a financial plan, the big picture on interest rates – in low interest rate environment, your cash isn't working for you as much. It might be losing to inflation, which is what we saw early out of the pandemic. And then when interest rates came up, now your money should be outpacing inflation because of higher interest rates. So there's so many ways we can go with this conversation. Mm-hmm. So we'll just let you ask the questions and we'll take it from there. But the interest rates overall on good for cash, bad for debt. Mm-hmm. Right. And because a higher interest rate environment currently is what we're seeing. And we don't know where the Fed's going to go or when they're going to move interest rates. But that's what Wall Street is looking at these days is what's the Federal Reserve going to do with the interest rate environment?
Just kind of a side question. Interest rates, is that always the most important question you ask yourself when you're approaching large purchases or investments or any kind of aspect of your financial plan that involves banking or retirement accounts?
I mean, it factors into if you're talking about big purchases like a house or a car or even student loans, I mean, if I think of it from a cash flow perspective, right, you have to be mindful what the current interest rate is or what it's going to be because that's going to affect what you're on the hook for every month and how large the fixed payment's going to be. So, yeah, I'd say it's definitely an important piece.
Okay.
Yeah,
it does factor into it. Is it the be-all, end-all? No, because it really comes down to can you afford it,
yeah,
right? But you might be able to afford a high interest rate. You may not be able to. Same thing with low interest rate. Mm-hmm. 10 years ago or 5 years ago, interest rates for 30-year mortgage were extremely low, but some people still couldn't afford a house. So it just depends. But the answer is always it depends, but it does have an impact on it.
Yeah. Spencer loves that answer. And we'll get there.
Yeah.
Those
are
his two favorite things.
Really
we'll get there. And we actually have other shows that we've recorded about that subject. So feel free to probe our massive library of content. You'll come up with something that will be of help, I think. You kind of touched on this earlier, Spencer, how interest rates affect investment strategies. So let's give people a sort of a vignette. You know, they're in their mid-40s. They have some investment accounts. They have a home, a mortgage. They're paying interest on those things, and then they have to consider maybe an increase or a decrease in their investment process, their personal investment process. Let's talk people through about how interest rates in general, not low, not high, but interest rates in general affect the investing process.
I mean, to be honest, I feel like it really shouldn't. I feel like if you watch financial news all day and you kind of see the turbulence, you feel like there is something, you should be super proactive and reactive. But yeah, to be honest, I don't really think it should affect it. Now, knowing how interest rates impact investing in general is important. I think that's why this is a good show. But, you know, if you're planning for retirement, you're building a financial plan, you know, your investment strategy shouldn't be switching every couple of years, or when rates fluctuate, you shouldn't be completely flipping the switch. You have to remember why you buy investments that are more subject and sensitive to interest rate changes. Know how they're going to operate, but just because interest rates are high or low, I wouldn't say that should dictate the strategy.
So risk tolerance.
Pretty much.
Right?
Yeah. Right.
Let's tell people what that means.
Yeah, well, your appetite for risk is how volatile you're willing to accept your investment aspect. One area interest rates does have the greatest impact, I would say, is in short-term investments. If you have money that's sitting on the sidelines for the next 6 months, 12 months, even 24 months, what we're currently experiencing is that money can generate extra income for you, interest, and that's a good thing. And that's one thing we didn't see pre-pandemic, because it was a low interest rate environment even into the pandemic, and short-term money wasn't working for you. It was pretty much dormant. It was 0% for the most part. So currently it's generating interest and income, and that's where interest rates can help you if you're a retiree and your short-term money might be able to generate 5%, which mm-hmm. is nice, right? That's mm-hmm. generating more interest and more money to be spent or utilized elsewhere.
Is that a tough conversation to have with clients? I literally know somebody who puts every dime they have in a safe in their home. They don't invest it. They don't do anything with it. If you've got somebody like that in front of you, let's say you have a couple, one has that mindset, one doesn't, how do you get through the behavioral aspect, the psychological aspect from a CFP's point of view to help them understand the value of taking that move?
Well, they have to be in agreement. First of all, they have to come to an agreement on how to invest it.
So you become a marriage counselor right away.
Right. That's part of the psychology and the put on our marriage counseling hat and say, okay, come, let's figure out a solution. Let's talk about the whys. Why do you feel this way? Mm-hmm. And maybe come to a resolution. When you choose that resolution, I actually forgot the question because I was thinking the marriage counseling part, right? Oh, money in the safe, right?
Right.
You're losing to inflation, right? Your money, if you can bury all your money in the backyard and have a successful financial plan, and you're okay with it, do it. That's fine. So it really comes down to...
what can you live with?
Yeah, what does it get you to the end game? And if that's your preference, it's okay.
So if you're a person who has to look at your statement every month of your investment accounts, you're going to drive yourself crazy. You know, it's you've got to be aware of what your own behavioral habits are and tendencies are.
Yeah. Yep.
Gotcha. I want to talk about high-yield municipal and corporate bonds. And we don't want to go too far down.
No, we don't. Oh, yeah.
But can those
go ahead, Spencer.
Can those be safer? I'm reading this question because this is not my lane, but I thought it was an interesting conversation to have. Can these be safer than traditional bonds when interest rates are maybe lower? Is there a methodology?
No, they aren't safer because if they're high yield, they're higher risk. With higher risk comes, there's risk on the table, and therefore you could lose more. Mm-hmm. The municipal bonds, a classic example was New York in the 1970s. Mm-hmm. They defaulted on their debt, right? So people who invested lost. Detroit had some issues in 2008. So there are situations where people, if you invest in a municipality, God forbid something happens with the U.S. Treasury, the U.S. government. Right. If you're investing in a bond, it comes down to the credit quality of whoever's backing that bond.
How do people vet those kinds of investments? Is there a place they can go with it? I mean, obviously, you know, seek the help of a certified financial planner. Very important. Don't try to do all this on your own. I see that a lot when we have conversations with people. You can only take yourself so far. This is such a universe, and there's just so many potential jukes and potential for danger. So, is there a methodology to it?
I mean, there are definitely resources you can use to look it up. I think to Stephen's point, like, there's always risk on the table. To answer your question directly, in traditionally those high yield bonds, when you're saying low credit quality, it means that there's just higher chance of defaulting, right? Going bankrupt, the company you're giving, funds in the form of those bonds. Lower interest rate environment, they tend to do a little bit better because it's easy money, right? They're not dealing with super high interest rates. Cost of capital is easy. So it's still risky, but maybe less. When rates go up, usually those get pinched pretty hard, right? Because now the cost of capital is a lot higher. There's a higher chance that they go under because the economy's slowing. But either way, it's a little bit risky.
How do you educate yourself on those?
Well, that's what you need. Bond specialist. If you're going to invest in bonds, you get a bond specialist.
Is that what they're called, a bond specialist?
Well, bond traders,
bond brokers. Traders.
So if you have heart problems, you go to a cardiologist, not your general practitioner, right? So you find that specialist and they would be able to walk you through it. But it comes down to the credit quality. To Spencer's point is, right, if you're going to apply for a loan and you have a good credit score, you get a lower interest rate. Same thing applies in the bond industry. If you buy a bond with high credit score, you're going to get paid a lower interest rate. If you get somebody who's risky, has a low credit score, you have to pay a higher interest rate as a consumer. So does the company that's offering, that has a bad credit score, that has to offer the bonds. They have to pay a higher interest rate.
In somebody's portfolio, there could be endless types of investments, ranging from real estates to trusts, mm-hmm. To regular corporate, bonds and so forth. How does someone diversify their risk when they're investing in different kinds of bonds? Is there a way they can do that?
Yeah, you can diversify the risk. Yeah, usually it's in a technical term, duration, but it just means how long essentially the bond goes out from when it matures. So if you want to kind of mitigate against interest rates fluctuating, you usually go with short-term bonds, which means they mature in 1 to 3 years. So it's just usually doesn't have as harsh of a fluctuation when it comes to rates changing. But I guess going back to with the bonds, I don't know many people that buy bonds as like a hedge in a rising or falling interest rate environment. Like a little bit of history to Stephen's point. In 2008, the Federal Reserve cut rates pretty much to zero, right? The financial crisis hit, rates go to zero, and pretty much all the incentive is to invest in equities. Because if you're someone who watches it all day, you're looking at bonds, they pay you nothing, and so people want to do equities. But plenty of people still needed bonds back in 2008, right? But you weren't holding it for the rate of return or because it was a hedge on inflation. You held it because generally it's less volatile than equities, right? So that's what I was saying earlier. Understand how they fluctuate, but ultimately, whether interest rates are high or low, if you're 55 and you're retiring in 5 years, you probably need some bonds.
Gotcha. See the certified financial planner for that. Most definitely.
Right.
So if somebody's interested in stocks that pay dividends for their income, mm-hmm. and I know some people who actually live on their dividends, and I don't know anything more about that other than to say that to you. How do you know if a company can keep paying dividends over time?
But that's exactly it. You don't know. It comes down to their cash positioning because the dividends can change.
The company, right?
They pay a 25-cent quarterly dividend. It could be cut if all of a sudden they experience a rough patch with their revenues and so forth. So, yeah, just relying on dividends.
That seems kind of risky, doesn't it?
Yeah, but traditionally, and here's a good example, is back for 20, 30 years, General Electric paid a 23-cent dividend religiously. It was just very consistent, and that's why a lot of people loved the stock, is you got a little bit of growth, but also was a consistent dividend. But then they hit a rough patch starting in 2008, and dividends were cut, and they're trying to rebuild that. But yeah, you never know. You never know. And the goal of the company is to keep continuing a dividend payment, but there's no guarantee there.
Yeah. I was going to say the trade-off, too, with dividends and the dividend-paying stocks, depending on how many you're going to use. I could throw out five big companies right now, their stocks that pay next to nothing in dividends, but people want to own, Amazon, they don't pay a dividend. NVIDIA, that everyone's talking about, huge AI company, they pay, it's like less than 0.5% dividend yield, which is super low. Alphabet, Apple, they either don't pay a dividend or it's next to non-existent. So, should you keep that in your portfolio if you want to be a huge income producing portfolio of dividends? No, but at the same time, do you not want to own some of those other companies where there's more of a growth tint to it? So if you just go super heavy and all you care about is dividends, it's maybe not the end of the world, but you're leaving something on the table.
Yeah. Obviously, those have to be balanced in with other forms of
compensation. Yeah, you're asking specifics and whether it's a bond or a stock. When you're talking about your portfolio, that's you don't want individual bonds. You don't want individual stocks.
That's a big
stocks.
Conversation.
You want a diverse portfolio, thousands and thousands of positions, because that's diversification. Same thing we talked about bonds. A bond mutual fund is much more diverse than an individual bond. Mm-hmm. And even when you talk about municipalities, you can buy a municipal bond fund, which is more diversified. So you can really diversify. That's how proper investing is done, which is a whole other podcast. But that's where diversification is so, and why it is so important.
And there are companies who vet, brokers who vet companies that are suitable for the stock market. See, I don't know if I can say the name on our podcast, but companies that actually go into these corporations and vet their marketing and vet their sales and are they clean? Do they have a high morale? And they pick and choose these individual companies to go into the stock market,
It depends on what kind of fund you're buying, right? If you're just buying an index fund, then no, not really, right?
Okay.
It fluctuates based on the stock price and shares of the company. So like if you're buying an S&P 500 fund, no one's really going in, right? It's just what are the top 500 companies in the U.S.? That's the index. It fluctuates
based on
that.
So it's a gamble.
No, that's the best you can do. The gamble is if you are more on the active side when you're buying a fund, right, a mutual fund, and that's when if you're trying to do a large growth fund, that usually means you're picking and choosing which big U.S. companies you want to use. You're not buying all of them. It could be a winner. It could be a loser, right? So
and
that's
just
more
risk. Envision you're in a grocery store and you're in the spaghetti sauce section, right? Hundreds of options, right? Which is the best one?
Yeah.
Who knows?
Mine.
Right? An actively managed mutual fund will pick which spaghetti sauce they want. When you buy an index fund, you're getting all of them in the basket, right? So that's why the benefit of an index fund is you're getting the whole aisle, right, the whole shelf, versus trying to find that one special stock or spaghetti sauce that's there.
Is there something people should be looking for more than just high dividend payouts?
Well, I think we kind of touched on that from the growth aspect. So I guess first things first, right? Depending on, stage in life, just first, how much should you have in stocks versus bonds? And then to Stephen's point, if you're doing index funds, or you're buying the spread, you're really not only fixating on dividends or growth, right? You're going to get a little bit of both, right? There are plenty of growth companies, plenty of dividend paying companies in the S&P 500 or other indices that you can buy. So it's a balancing act.
And it's a special management, too. So, again, to say the answer is it depends, and it is specific to each individual.
Yeah.
So there's one question that I think is going to be – it could go either direction with both of you. I'm not sure. So I'm going to ask it and just take a deep breath. So fixed income alternatives, are there some standouts? So, like I've heard, annuities are an option. Are there certain standouts over others or – I mean, this is kind of a catalyst to talk about annuities,
product,
which,
right?
which is good because we can dispel their allure.
You're talking about specific products, and that's where we don't want to go down that.
Yeah,
that's why I don't like it because we're talking about a specific product versus a financial plan.
Okay.
Right? And if we're talking about an annuity, then there's so many types of annuities that are out there. I don't even want to go there.
Okay.
Yeah, I guess the one that people probably think of in the context of interest rates, TIPS, right, Treasury inflation protected securities, people usually jump to those when inflation's going up. The reason is, as inflation goes up, the principal of what you put into the TIPS, right, what you invested goes up, and so therefore the interest payments you get off of it goes up. Again, I'm not huge on TIPS, right? That's an option that people always bring up, but there's some pros and cons.
Like
that comes
the
with
big
that too.
One was the I-bonds, right?
Yeah.
What's recently? I think it's now
4%.
And now it's around 4%, and you can have a regular high yield savings account for 5%.
Yeah, I-bonds are like double E-bonds. So everyone was talking about these 3 years ago, 2 years ago. And the reason it was so hot was because it tracks with inflation. So when inflation was 7%, 8%, 9%, that's the interest rate they were paying. But there are some penalties if you don't hold it for 5 years and everything else. It dropped from 9% back down. Now it's 3%. You could go put your money anywhere else and it's going to be 3%, right? Just keeping it cash. So
okay. Okay, Stephen, you can let go of your heart now.
All right.
Let's talk about real estate. How do interest rates impact real estate investments specifically?
What we're seeing right now in the major cities for real estate investing in the commercial side, office buildings, it's tragic at this point.
Yeah.
It's devastating for New York. I think San Francisco, the bigger cities are just getting crushed because a lot of commercial real estate is leveraged on short-term loans. So meaning there's maturity coming up, we'll refinance the debt, and these loans are now refinancing at probably over 7% where they were maybe 4%. So it's really hindering in this way where we're going to see a lot of banks possibly fail here in the next few months. Apparently, I heard yesterday on TV one of the shows, they were talking about commercial real estate having most maturities is happening in 2024. So this could be the year, like coming up here in the next 6 months, that you could see a lot of default, a lot of banks in financial distress.
The smaller ones.
Yeah, well, yeah. It depends how you're investing. All the big banks are invested in large real estate as well. So commercial real estate is very dicey right now.
Yeah. You usually when rates go up, if it's rates going up as a function of inflation, you will hear people say that real estate's a good hedge, though, and the thought process is.
Yeah, I was going to say locally, you on the lighter side, you do see an influx of big buildings that have been during COVID were sitting quiet that are being repurposed and purchased.
Real estate grows at the rate of inflation.
Exactly.
Right? Rents, so if we were, as what you said, 8%, 9%, we were at a high inflationary environment, which is why a lot of the corporate investors were buying real estate hand over fist because they knew that's where the money was, the potential money.
And right? And that's why everyone was the last several years saw your rents jump up significantly. You were seeing no increase, and then it was, huge increases, 10%, 15%, because some people weren't jumping it.
And
that's
still going.
That's why it's phrased that way. But again, to me, there's always, technically a diversification benefit of doing real estate. It's a hedge. It's slightly less correlated from the market. Whether that makes sense for you, could be, could not be. There's some risks on the table. So again, that's why I said that could have made sense 5 years ago before rates went up, right? But and it could when rates do go up, but long-term lens.
A lot of those buildings in our area are being turned into apartments, which is crazy because we're going to have...
That's market to market, and it's the supply side, right? How much supply is available. And even there's a lot of cities such as New York, they're trying to convert office space into residential space.
Yeah.
Right. And that's the trend. Because another side of it is office space, the demand has gone down because a lot more work from home environments. So it's a whole other subset, but there's risk there too.
Yeah.
So
in Columbus, just sort of sidebar, I read recently in the last 6 months or a year with the Intel plant going in, that the influx of apartments that are being built in the Columbus area are going to accommodate only 12% of the growth of the population over the next 10 years.
Oh, this city's got a
so
lot of buildings.
All of these all of these businesses that are sitting dormant, I mean, that could be a great cash cow.
There
was
one
for some
building
of these
downtown, I forget,
developers.
Is it the one of the Chase building? There's a building downtown Columbus that they're repurposing to residential. Right. So there's actually a government building. They announced this right during the pandemic. I think they're going to repurpose residential.
Ooh, that'll be cool.
Yeah. So it's right along the river there. So, again, it's going to happen, but that's all zoning. Right. That's now you got to go through zoning and then repurposing.
And then
that
comes, how do you accommodate those living spaces as far as commerce is concerned?
Correct.
Or grocery stores and all those things. That'll be interesting.
Yeah. No, that's
that'll pop the economy up a good bit.
Market to market.
How do people invest in properties and protect themselves against rising prices? Is there a sort of a magic bullet to doing that, or is there person to person?
Yeah, that's specific. That's a hard one because that's specific to each individual. You need capital, right? You need good credit. But again, it's very risky, and you don't want too much in your portfolio, right? 5%, 10% of any type of investment. You don't want to overextend yourself.
Yeah, I agree with that. I just feel like this shows how big of a roller coaster that we've been put through with the interest rates because of the Fed. Like I said, and I wasn't practicing in 2008. I'm sure you can hear it in the voice, but I'm just thinking like the Fed cut rates to zero, and then they made it a couple years, and then they tried to raise them, and then the market threw a tantrum, and then they dropped them back down, right? And then 2017, 2018, they finally started to raise rates, and then COVID happened. They slashed them, and now people are getting clubbed over the back of the head with rates going up as quick as they did. So I think the best thing you can do is just educate yourself, right? You should know, depending on what fund you're going into, are they really heavy in commercial or is it residential real estate? So they're all going to get hit, but some more than others. And so that's why it's just really detail oriented. And just the more you know, since we're getting put through a roller coaster, the better.
And sorry to interrupt, that the interest rate environment, everyone's like, oh, we need a low interest rate environment. Who says we need a low interest rates? Are there to steer the economy, right? Exactly. Let's debate it, right? Because it's there to steer the economy.
Well, wait a minute. From my perspective, that's the sweet spot. It's always low interest rates.
Right. But what if inflation is too high? You want the interest rates controls
but
the inflation.
But doesn't it moderate?
No.
Don't they moderate each other?
They sort of do, but you have to have that balance. The Fed created a policy that was good because it was low inflation, low interest rate environment for an extended period of time. But what we're seeing now is it's heavy inflation, so you have to raise interest rates to curb inflation. The consumer ends up paying for the inflation anyway. I think we probably did a podcast on that too, but
in what ways?
Because prices go up, right? Look at McDonald's, look at the grocery store. The consumer ends up paying for the inflation. Mm-hmm. So you have wage inflation,
which is unfair because your cost of goods is a double hit.
Correct, and so you need your money to outpace inflation, and that's why it's devastating for people who live paycheck to paycheck because you can't keep up.
What if wages are not meeting those needs?
That's the problem.
You know, how do companies adjust to increase wages to meet the needs of inflation?
So that's exactly what we saw.
Because it's all based on sales,
right? Let's pick McDonald's, right? McDonald's had a wage increase. It's pretty consistent, right?
Yeah, and now it's a great
and now
great
people
example.
Are complaining about the $10 Big Macs.
Yeah.
Because that's who pays, the consumer pays for the inflation. There's no way around
it. So that's why when you go to the restaurant, a $6 meal is now
$10. Right, exactly. Okay. No, that's exactly it. It all flows through to the consumer. So interest rates are a vital part of our economy to just steer the ship. And the economy of the U.S. is so massive, it takes years to get it on course. And that's why soft landing, everyone thinks a soft landing is like, a few weeks. No, we're still going to go in for another 6 to 12 months. There's still a long stretch here that they have to navigate delicately because if they lower interest rates and there's more money out there too fast, it's going to trigger more inflation. Mm-hmm. So it's just going to – and inflation kills people from the bottom up. The poor people suffer the most, and then it hits the middle class. And then right now the economy is being driven by the upper middle class and wealthy.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, I agree.
Sorry.
I didn't know if you were going to say that.
You're obviously very passionate about this.
Soapbox.
I like it.
Yeah.
But maybe they should cut it a little bit.
Yeah.
Now, when I do that, you accuse me of going on a diatribe.
Right.
Well, that was good.
I love it.
Yeah, it's all good.
Remember back in the day when you had your first job interview and your recruiter asked you, so where do you see yourself in five years? Look at the last 5 years.
Right. No one would have predicted this.
The synopsis you just gave, Spencer, I'm sitting here thinking it is insane what can happen in five years.
Yeah, and to Stephen's point with how the economy moves slow, that's why everyone's looking to the Fed, right? I mean, even when the federal government does something, it's slow acting, but everyone looks to the Fed because it's raise the rates and something changes, and same deal, cut the rates, something changes. But yeah, it just shows you because of what's happened in the last 16 years how much we're all dependent on these rates and rate environments. It's driving everything, and it's a little bit absurd.
Yeah. So my takeaway is to seek the help of the professional. It's a great segue to the end of the show. Make sure you're reaching out to the professional, the team of professionals, so your certified financial planner can navigate all of these conversations and help you understand where best to put your money. We hope you found today's topic helpful. We're glad you tuned in. We hope you'll come back. We are Managing to Be Wealthy.
That's a wrap for today's episode of the Managing to Be Wealthy podcast. We help you make the most of your money without any hidden fees or commissions. Remember, the best investment you can make is in yourself and your financial future. Keep listening for more expert advice and tips. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast. To schedule a 1-hour complimentary consultation to discuss your financial concerns, visit our website, managingtobewealthy.com.